This year is brought to you by Eshel Publications. Eshel Publications is a non-profit organization dedicated to spreading the Torah, Shiurim, and Sefarim of Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky. For sponsorships or more information, visit eshelpublications.com.
Okay, so the person I want to speak about is somebody who's really critical in the history of Torah yeshivas in Poland, and yet very few people, anybody knows who it is and what it is. So, like we've spoken times before, Torah had a way of migrating, and Torah had gone from Italy to Germany. It flourished in Germany, and then it, because of the Xeris and Redifis, it left Germany, and it moved to Poland. Sorry, Aaron. Torah left Germany and moved to Poland.
Been back though.
Except now with the Kremlin Berlin, it's gotten back again. But other than that, it went. So, who are the people that are instrumental? We have records of people. They find odd sorts of people, you know, living in Poland and so on. The first person of a Talmud Chacham of tremendous stature, his name was Rabbi Yaakov Polak. He was unclear if he was born in Poland and learned in Germany. He definitely learned in Germany. Was he born in Germany or not? Unclear. He went to Prague. He was there for a while, yeshiva and so on, and had to leave and ended up in Poland, where really he started Torah. His big Talmud was named Reb Shalom Shachna, and Reb Shalom Shachna's big Talmud is Rambam. And Ramah refers back, he quotes him, we'll see in a second, the Rabbi Yaakov Polak, he's called the Maharif. That is basically who he is and what he is. He, besides, so we know a few points about his life. His life is actually fascinating. Two or three very stormy episodes. A second part that's really extremely mysterious and fascinating is everyone writes about him that he was the one who brought pilpul and chilukim to its high point, and they almost all the sfarim write about how terrible these pilpul and chilukim are. Except Rabbi Yaakov Polak was not, it was Amita Torah and so forth, but it became corrupted. And there's a whole slew of terminology of different types of learning that I mentioned a little bit. The Imam Shif mentioned one place or another. There's a Nürnberger, an Eisberger, a Blozer, and you look around and Regensberger, what are they? What are we talking about? So we'll try to a little bit get a feel for it. I'm going to quote a lot from inside because I think it's important. So the first thing is, so he was born in 1470, unclear if in Germany or Poland, but his main upbringing was in Nuremberg. He learned in Nuremberg, so he was born in 1470. He learned in Nuremberg by Rabbi Yaakov Margolis. That's also going to be very interesting. He got married in Prague. He was a Rav and Rosh Hashiva there. And then because of Maisa Shehoya, and we'll explain the Maisa also, he ended up running away to Poland. That's where he established a big yeshiva. It wasn't yet the final stop in his life. We'll get to it later. So the first thing is the Ramah quotes his Rebbe Reb Shalom Shachna. So Ramah and Shuvas. V'chein kibalti said halacha l'maisa from me'adoyni moiru ovi agoyin rabnu moiru shakol bnei agoylo ma'rab sholom ha'mechune shachna zatzal. I read a kapos makshat. That's how the Ramah writes about Reb Shalom Shachna. And so on and so forth. I asked him many times that he should write a tshuva sefer and psak sefer, and because of Rav Chasidus of Anasusoi, it was tremendous honor. he said, I'm afraid that if I write a sefer, that will become the absolute final sefer. I don't want people to rely on me. And therefore, and people who are legil eruah, they should work out a machlokes themselves and paskin. And therefore, people should paskin as per a shaila comes up, they learn the sugin they paskin. That's Reb Shlomo Shachna told him. That's Rabbi Yaakov Polak. Shum sefer gam shum tshuva sheshalchem erochoik latika beisam. Of all the tshuvas he wrote, they didn't copy any. They felt it was gaiva, it was haughty that they could write a psak sefer and that would become a sefer. So the lashonis that Rav Moir writes about him, Moiran shal kol bnei agoilos and so forth, and yet they both refused to write psaks for him because they felt it wasn't worthy of them. Now, the first thing is he was involved in a parsha which really, really was a big blow up. Everyone here knows what miyun is, I'm sure. Miyun is that when a father is mekadesh a daughter who's under 12, a father can mekadesh a daughter. She's 100% married, and she needs a get. A father can mekabel kedushin. The brothers, and so if the father, if she's yesema, the mother and brothers marry her off. Midaraisa, it's meaningless. However, the Chachom HaMesakin, a type of Ketushin, where Miyun helps. All she has to do is say she doesn't want, and that's enough. It's a Perek Yivamis about Miyun, or Machlokes and about in front of whom, Bechulu. But Ketushin Miyun is a one-sided, from the woman's side, walking away from the marriage. In the mid-1400s, there was a very chashuv rav who decided that it is it's not a good idea. They used to make miyun. He felt that it was it led to a lot of bad things. Whatever it was salka upon him, he was mevatel that they shouldn't have kedushin miyun. It was a very chashuv rav. I think it's Menachem Merzbrick or something like that. That you can't have miyun. 50 years later, Reb Yaakov Polak's wife's sister was married with that type of marriage, and he allowed her to make miyun and to leave. Every rav came out against him. They put him into chayrim. Including his own Rebbe, Rabbi Yaakov Margolis, came out against him. Kimat nobody sided with him, and he had kimat all Rabbanim of Poland against him. And here's a lashon from the Mari Mintz. Remember from last time, the Mari Mintz writes, so they asked him about putting him to Cherem and so on, and he said, I don't understand something. He said, even if it was a Talmud, if his own Rebbe asked, if he didn't agree with the previous psak of your canceling it, he should have gone and fought it out with him. And if he would listen to me, he would go to this Rav and ask him to his cave and ask him for mechila. The ve'im chas shalom ein choizer, and if he's not choizer, royal arido mikdulosa, they first should fire him from his job being the rav Rosh Hashiva, v'acharkach l'nadoisei, and then put him to cherem. Al ipcholoi, but not put him in cherem first and then marry from gedula. Brings the gemaras and so on and so forth. That's what the Remintz writes about him. The Marshal, who was later, a bit later in Poland, we spoke about him once, he talks about this in Yam Shel Shlomo and Yevamos when he talks about Miyun. The Godel Echad B'Doira Sheher Lefonai, a Godel in Doros Onai, Noag Vos Halach Al Maisa, he did it, V'Hoyshe Besen, U'Miyana Yisayme B'Bailo. She Adam Godel B'Toira. So she was reminding her husband, who was an Adam Godel B'Toira, V'Nechel Kol Of Kol HaChacham Achrein Moshe Iskarati, and all the Chacham argued him. The Kol Dole Ashkenaz, the Gozel Lo Shetetz B'Miyun U'B'Chuel Kocha. They put him into Cherem. Because he was such a big person, he said, I take full responsibility, and did not pay attention to the Xeris. They always were Noigam Miyun. What do you want? This woman who was Mimayan, his sister in law, married someone else, Shemate heard that shit didn't work out. Lachain maskim the gzeis hakadmonim. I'm also maskim this gzeirah shalei lemayin. Ba'afi mianot they shouldn't be mashkech mianot unless she got married up. He bezin with the mion, and then we don't take her out from a baal. That is what the mashal writes. The Ramah in Darkei Moshe brings this, and then in Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber writes, Yeshayim in the idne yesh lahachme. Some say that she shouldn't be Mimayan. The loykeish machmirin, the omer shein basenis as a klal. So the Ramah brings la halacha. So you have a fascinating hishtalshus here. You have Kol Gdol Perlin came out against him. He's stuck by his guns. Reb Sholem Shachna was the person that was. Reb Sholem Shachna was the person that was on his Talmud. And there are more passing like that lalocha. So it's a fascinating piece over here. How does that work out? Okay. Now, he also, at some point later, he came out very strongly against, there was some sort of dintera where somebody refused to appear, and he and there were rabbonim on his side. One of them was the Marimitz, the son of Avromins, and he came out against Avromins and put him into Cherem for telling him he doesn't have to pay at his bezdin. It was very interesting. He, at some point later, somebody in this kehilla was Mizana, a woman was Mizana, someone else. He got up and said she has to leave her husband. The person refused. He was very well connected. He was so well connected that Rabbi Yaakov Pollack had to run away from Poland. He ended up in Yerushalayim. Now, until everything I've said now, we have in Tshuvas form. We have everything. Ending up in Yerushalayim is much more vague. There are 2, 3, 4 records of people writing that. Rabbi Yaakov Pollack ish Yerushalayim, he's from Ashkenaz. It's pretty sure they ended up in Yerushalayim. Unclear what happened there. What we do know is that he came back at some point much later, like more than 10 years later, to Poland, and he was nifted in Poland. But we don't have anything more about those years and so on. So those were parishes in his life. There was this Mion thing was a huge storm. His putting a cherem on the Avromins for not appearing, for telling somebody not to appear in his bezdin was a monetary sichsuch. And then finally be standing up and saying that this woman is Asur Levaila, and that's that. What about this Derech Halimut? So I want to read Shelo HaKadosh, which is very interesting. So I wanted a few terms I want to use. The general term for these pulpulim was called chilukim. Very hard to know exactly what that means. What are those chilukim we're talking about? The Chassam Sofer says he has an tshuva, and he thinks that it was, since the main reason to learn by a Rebbe is to be medame milsa lemilsa, so when you shlug up someone, you say it's not similar. The chilukim was to show that things that seem to have been brought as raya is not really raya. It's hard to understand why there's anything wrong with that. That's what halacha is about, and so on. So there's some other explanations. The place that I found written the best about it, the summoner of Meyer, he is a German, and not like an Israeli German, not a German German, he wrote these things in two or three places. There's a journal called Yerushasenu, which has German. It's all about the Minhage Ashkenaz, the proper Ashkenaz Minhagim. It comes out once a year, and they very much push that. So he wrote up about these Darach HaLimud in Yerushasenu. He also wrote up, there was a three-volume set that we have in yeshiva. It's about the yeshiva Rama Befulda, about the yeshivas that they had. And he discusses also these things. So his work about writing, describing those things is really good. One other place I found very good, in the Akdoma to the Tzlach that they put out, in the fancy edition of the Tzlach, in front of the volume on Ezekiel and so on, he has someone, whoever put it out, has also very well written up all the different things. I want to read through first the Shaloah Kaddish, because Shaloah Kaddish is very famous and it's fascinating. The Inyan Achilukim, so they're talking, it's some sort of type of pilpul. And he said he himself used to do it, but it's not clear what. The Inyan Achilukim, you betel vutolim. They should be bottled. Miyitah Shabbalim Halvaid never would have invented. The Afim Yoima Oima Shumagit Karb Lepshutay, or Magab Ben Yomatim. Even if you'll say that a lot of it is close to the emes, if you even have one thing that's not emes, it asks b'mashu. Umiyuchal leshayar havoin plili lahafach divul kim chayim teres emes, and it's such a terrible affair when people take divul kim teres emes and twist it around. Now, v'hine shemati dibas k'tzas mechoch mador oimrim b'imloy oid achiluk magam megriven. I mean, if you don't measure people by how sharp they are and what kind of wonderful pilpulim, how do you measure who's more chashiv? Ka'oz yakuma harbet fes yeshiva. A lot of people are going to open up yeshivas. That's the taina they have, why it's important to have pilpulim so we can measure who's smarter and who's become a yeshiva. Al dvor ma'eli says royal lekroya. This type of attitude we should raise kriya, because people want their kavod instead of kvod shemayim. He says, "Vehine says, yesh kat mishugoyim oimrim achiluk mechadet." Some say that it sharpens your mind, so it's good to have these false pilpulim. Oime kein royal nezifa chada avim hoyekin. If it's true. I mean, to say things that are not emes in order to sharpen your mind. Who says? It's not sharpening your mind. It's spending your time on doing a nonsense and being moitzelaz on Torah. How do you think the Rebbe and Tam they became chudadim? Because they learned Torah Emes, they learned Torah Emes. Ubekiyas Mesechtes Vasmoda, Vechoizen Tomid. They learned Mesechtes, they knew them well, they were tremendous Masmidim. And then he says, Uzman Ben Azmanim Shavim. They made no distinction between learning during Zman and learning Ben Azmanim. So if you want to come about Tosfos, we have the extended Zman and extended and that's where you go. Rakdova Zehu Mitzvah Beidbreaker. Vehine. Gamkin chidut, even sharp things, Dehainu letaretz drochim amitim, to answer in emissary ways, kol Eusbringer, Nürnberger, Regensburger. Even to answer all these, v'chein betoises lekashikol v'intoimo oitemo shubaloizois, and then bloizois is also blozer, they were called. That's another fourth type of technique. Dvar meilu mechal teres emes. This is teres emes. V'ine gam chidut achidut. Bivade mishalom et vayom biyom filun avidei and so on and so forth. He says if you're medactic in Rashi, v'chol dibu v'dibu sharashi yesh bu nistorim in yonim ufloim. Every diktuk in Rashi has tremendous things in it. Ki chiba chiba kula baruch ha-kodesh. It's all Ruach HaKodesh. And basically that's the point he says. V'dovaze says, Yenoyeg zmane ben azmanim. People should sit and learn like that. Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, during the zman, during ben azmanim. V'lo yizoch v'lo yipoket shom ben azmanim. They shouldn't mention the word ben azmanim ever. V'yeokim in oilom. They should be nekam in oilom. Chaval al Davni says, I regret that I spent most of my life with these chilukim. Chotosi avisi pashati. Zim shalor kodesh. Al kein bosi lahaza deres aboyim, mazeis hapku zidonis eskuyosai, yom le yashem yifazgo al nalu karakle yisrol, zaksis harab. So this is incredible. So what exactly are all these things? And what's interesting is he says this is the Dvarim Emes. Another mocker about Rabbi Yaakov Pollack is the Tshuvas Marivayel, where he says something very interesting. He says they used to have two zmanim in yeshiva. There was a zman to learn the Gemara right, and then there was a zman taisis to be mefalpel. Kivarek shonem efalpel in v'limu de charifas koyim bezman atoisves ozan regilu lemishka lemitu bediktukim chilukim dakim kemeal pila bekupa demachta. During the time, so he's speaking in Revile about what type of svaris can you use in psak. So he says when we're learning in yeshiva during the toisves man, that was his mom in Lund Be'iyun, then we say extraordinarily thin, fine chilukim and contorted svaris, and you know, fitting the mild pillar bekuber machta is a losing moral, like fitting an elephant through a needle, through the hole of a needle. Avol lifsei kadina late iso to paskin or to be matter, and you can't, you can only do it with solid rice and so on and so forth. So the question is, so what are these terms they're talking about? And again, it's very hard to understand which ones they were right, which ones are not. So let's go to, let's explain what they are. So the easiest one is beloizeh means, it comes from beloizeh. It means anytime the Gemara brings a point and then another point and a kasha, and you don't need the first point for the kasha. The question is, why do you have that? We see it a lot of times in Tosfos. Tosfos will say in a divrei masel, this is pshat in the Gemara, vim toima, so on. It is pashit that Tosfos is going in order. He says, this is the pshat that you have to learn the Gemara, that seems to be the Gemara, and now I have a kasha. It's clear that without that previous hanacha, there wouldn't be a kasha. So saying pshat, and the Gemara sometimes will have, where the Gemara will say two things and then ask a kasha. And the second thing, we have to ask ourselves, it seems to be necessary to have the first piece as well. So that lechura, that's a very pashut way of, yes, that's something that you need for pshat. So that's called bloizer. It's milosh bloizer. I remember once sitting in a shir by Rabbi Shapiro, and someone asked a question just then. I don't know, he was asking about whatever, something or other. Rabbi Shapiro could be extremely sharp. He told him, The axiom is that when you're asking a question, it means until I said what I had to say, things made sense. Whatever I said disrupted it, and now you have a kasha. So be so kind as to explain to me how you were learning before I said, and then I'll tell you how I didn't mess it up. But the point is that the loiza means when you're adding information and then adding a kasha, you have to ask yourself, why is it necessary? That's one. The Eisbrenger is that sometimes the Gemara brings a whole Brisa and then asks a kasha from the first half. The second half of the Brisa, one did not need at all for the kasha. So why does the Gemara bring it? And saying a svara, you'd have to say why you need to have second half of the Brisa. That's called Eisbrenger. It means in Yiddish to bring out. Eisbrenger means to bring out. In other words, you brought out the whole Brisa in order to ask the kasha. Now, is this a valid diuk or not? So the Shulchan Aruch says, lefomim mevia abraisa, leihoyt zoch la, we don't think. And v'derech, so he says, the Rosh Hashivas tried to answer that without bringing the end, it wouldn't be a kasha. Be'emes, he says, zeltach yasha, u'betnai shudach kar, it's okay if it's straightforward. In other words, if you can give a one-step teretz, but some of the terutzim used to be, and people wanted to show the chrifas, that from the second half of the price, you see they hold like someplace else, which holds someplace else, holds somewhere else, which, you know, bring it back to there. That's far-fetched. And it so he says, if you can answer straightforward, it's reasonable. So he says, Ritzoni Loima, she stiras that teretz nira miyad b'yito shemevi. You can see it right away. If it requires a whole long cheshm until you get the steer, it can't be. So point one is, he says, if it's a very sensible thing, then okay. Two, the real reason is, the Masader of the Gemara felt certain brises needed to be included in Gemara, and this brise was one of them. And therefore, once we bring one half, we bring the other half. Venirly says, he says, the editor of the Gemara, Rav Nirvashi, in other words, the Maksha asked from the beginning. The editor made the decision to include the entire Braisa because it's important to have the entire Braisa as in the Gemara. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. He's not a professor, not an academic. Shulchan Aruch says it. So that's an Eisbrenger. A Regensburger, the Maram Shif actually brings someplace in Bamitzia, I think, that without this, he says, if we don't say this, we're going to have a Regensburger on our hands. What is a Regensburger? So, you have cases in the Gemara where somebody asked somebody else. Someone asked, was a boilu for someone else? The person answers whatever he answers, and then he asks from a brice on him. So the kasha is, if you knew the brice, so why did you ask the question? Somebody was a boiler for somebody else, and he asked the question, and then then he says, he answered him something, and then he asked him from a brisa. Why? What were you thinking? I mean, you had the answer. What were you asking for? That's called a Regensburger. A Nuremberger is when you have a Gemara that has two. You have two mandi amrim, and then Sarimor will ask Yishmidas, We ask kashas from Bryce's to each one of them. So the question is, so before Abai and Rav were cholek on it, why didn't we sit down and ask the Bryce's on each other? These Bryce's are says each other, Gabbard is din. So before you had this machlokas, why did you ask the Bryce's on each other? That is a Nuremberger, and the truth is, again, if we have some assumptions about how the Gemara was constructed, it might be different. But these were the type of things where they tried to answer what each one was thinking before, and this is where it starts getting complicated. It means the Maksha knew already about the other Braisa, but he had a different teretz fit until he said what he said, and so on and so forth. And that's where it can start getting very complicated. I bring one example here. It's printed from a sefer, it's printed from the Kuti Yosef. It's a sefer that has a lot of shtickle Torah on this. Now, I don't have it myself, but I'll tell you, I'll just read what it sounds like. Sugyas, it says all sorts of sugyas, how to abstract them in it. Hasugyazu amoik moid befilpul becharifas gadol. The Maksha asks a kasha, but the kasha can be understood in different ways. The Tatsan understood the Pasha side of the kasha, and he had an answer. But you can't say that the Maksha didn't know the answer, because then he wouldn't ask Vaita. So now when the Maksha saw that he only understood the simple aspect of the kasha, so he has a second kasha, which is not Kipshutai. The Tartsin didn't understand the Maksha what he asked, but he understood that he didn't understand what he was thinking. And therefore, he answered him a different way. And he was saying, if I would have understood you, I should have answered you this way, but I must have meant something else. The third Makshin understands Shatachas Vakehimoy, Al Shehevinoise Kipshute, Obemishal Der Gimel. So, you're putting in, so in effect, what you're doing is, there was some sort of unwritten assumption that everyone understood the other Kashin Teretz and knew an answer, but they thought that the other person thinks something else. It allows for an infinite amount of reading into it that we don't have any mokken and shoresh fit. That seems to be an example. That's a sefer that was exorciated by who writes over here. The Chavis Yoy writes about it. He says that somebody wrote a sefer. It's Moira Derech on these drushes, and the person writes in the sefer that these are amazing drushes. He says they are like soap bubbles that float in the air. And he said, take a look, he himself admits how nebulous his those svaras are. Like, they have no foundation. So this person was saying, wow, this is like so up in the air. And the Chavis Yoy writes in it, this is terrible. He calls it chilukim shlek. It means horrible chilukim. So I don't know exactly. So we don't really have a clear idea of what you're referring to, because the Nuremberger is Medrash. Because some of, again, like the Shalom writes, some of these things are very sensible, and sometimes the Gemara say the Gemara is me karma kasava. When it seems unreasonable that there's no other tzad to think like that, the Gemara will ask it me karma kasava. Or when some Mefurish Mishnah, it can't be that the other person didn't know Mefurish Mishnah. You'll have this Taisel pickup sometimes in it, like upon him. So Rabbi Yaakov Polak is the father of Torah in Poland. His Talmud became the Ramah, who's quintessential of that Torah. We have nothing from him. As much as he was such a takif, it's fascinating. Here's a person who was such an anav that says, it would be wrong of me to write something that people should depend on me. I'm not roy for it, I don't want it, and so on. On the other hand, when he held he was right, he stood up against everybody. And in halacha, that became the Ramo was kaveas, his Rebbe's Rebbe, and that became nikvah. It's fascinating the shtalshus advar. As far as all these different drachim, it's basically a stark interest today. It's not the type of things we do today, but it's interesting how there was a constant. You find a lot. The Maral writes about this. They write about pulpulim shel hevel, and so on. It's hard to know. Somebody once said the difference between pshat and pshetel is whether I said it or you said it. What I said is pasha pshat. What you say is a pshetel, is a pulpul. Like that was that's how somebody once said. But the point is, I guess maybe looking from the way I understood it from my rebbeim and so on. If what you say fits into the words and the inyan well, and it seems straightforward, then it makes sense. When something needs a dozen steps, and none of it is in the Gemara, and nothing of it over here to say that there's so much hidden that's not there is stretching it. So in the Marshall, when you're looking at Tosis, like we do a lot of times, so Tosis starts with when he says something, then he asks a kasha. Kasha is going on that. If Tosis brings a raya, there's a reason why he needs a raya from there. There's a reason why if Tosis brings two or three rayas, it might very well be because each raya is weak and it's support. Those are things that are straightforward. But when you're putting it into Tosis, the Gemara's mouth, a half a dozen steps, they didn't say anything. The Chaznish writes to somebody. Somebody wrote to him a pshat in the Gemara. I don't remember. Yeah, it was pshat in the Gemara that was nice pshat, but there was no remez of it in the Gemara. So he said, Rabbi Seinu, with their tuv libam, because our rabbisai was such good-hearted people, they wouldn't have withheld from us such a nice pshat if it really was. In other words, it's the derech hachachma, and Chazish writes this in a critique of Rav Shach Seif. It's printed Rav Shach in a letter. He said, sometimes you say something which you realize is the depth behind what's there. And it's not written, but it makes a lot of sense. And you feel this is the implication of words, but when you have something which is doesn't seem to be reasonable that this is what the words mean, then it's not. You know, as he says, you have to be very careful. And it's fascinating. I would say about my Rebbe Reb Nachum, when a person would ask him a kash on a shir, sometimes he would say, "I don't have a teretz, but I don't retract. But we'll find a teretz." Sometimes somebody would show him and say, Pshat and Rashi, I'm going to another Rashi, if Nachum would look at it and say, no, it's not, I was wrong. That it had to fit into what was said, that if you're trying to say this is what Rashi said, this is what the Gemara means, it has to be reasonable that this is what could be there. Sometimes, it's also matrix sometimes when he has no choice. But the idea to say things that are just built, like he said, like soap bubbles, there's no foundation for it. That's something that begs to, you know, is it really authentic or not? Okay, Al Capone, that's what I wanted to talk about. Yeah.